I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on LOP radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment, and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Doc says.
Hello and welcome to the Doc Says here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment, the greatest matches and rivalries of the WrestleMania era, also available as an audiobook, and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. And wherever you may be listening, I thank you for making me a part of your day. This has been a huge week in the world of professional wrestling. There's just no getting around it. This has probably been the biggest week in pro wrestling in 20 years. Last week, I mentioned on the show the personal competition for the dominant force in my wrestling fandom that I was sort of self-instigating, and that WWE would get its chance to retain its long-held spot, while NXT, AEW, and New Japan, hell, maybe even Impact and the NWA, attempted to take that spot. That was the beginning of an ongoing discussion that I assume is going to last through the end of this calendar year and perhaps beyond. But I thought further about it and decided that there needed to be some criteria for me to go on. As recent weeks have probably made obvious, I'm in a soul-searching time in my wrestling fandom. The pay-per-view-only model of watching WWE that I discussed with Maverick in early September on this show, it's sound in theory, for instance, but it also means spending money on a product that I genuinely don't have much faith in anymore, that just genuinely doesn't excite me. That concept would actually work very well with New Japan, which is a very special event-driven enterprise. So it's a lot of it's going to be based on the television product. I'm going to allow the television product to try to win me over, as it once had to do to earn my pay-per-view buy in the past before the network era came to be and really offered up the opportunity for a WWE diehard fan, someone that was really invested in their product, to take a sizable step back from watching the television show to allow you, as a diehard WWE fan, to sort of watch in sport highlight fashion on YouTube or some medium of that variety to keep up with what's going on week to week, leading into a pay-per-view which oftentimes would present such stunning previews, video previews for the matches involved that, I mean, you could, that's where the concept of being pay-per-view only in essence started to take a stronger foothold, I think, in this current wrestling environment. Is you just didn't need to watch TV anymore. You could get a good idea of what WWE wanted you to see as the story without cutting through some of their lackluster week-to-week Tasmanian Devil-style creative stylings that you'd have to, I guess you could say, somewhat suffer through on if you watched the week-to-week product. So getting TV back into the fold, getting a television product back into the position to be what wins you over is kind of a foreign modern concept, at least for yours truly. I think there are a lot of people out there that feel the same. So let's break down some of the things I was looking for when I went into my Monday Night Raw viewing. I haven't watched Raw in its entirety in a long time, and I had every intention with Seth Rollins being challenged by Rey Mysterio for the WWE Universal Championship, something that was hyped for a week. I had every intention of really seeing Raw through to that conclusion because I was assuming that would be the main event. I set it up on the DVR. I got really invested in it. I made a tweet about it on Monday afternoon talking about how hyped I was for that match, that I thought it was an ideal television match for the modern era with the roster so stacked, and sometimes a match like that that maybe doesn't make sense to do as the main event of a pay-per-view is the perfect main event of a television show, because essentially what you've got in Rollins versus Mysterio going in is a match between comfortably two of the top 40 stars of the WrestleMania era, Rollins is rapidly ascending that list. Rey Mysterio's place on that list has long since been shored up. At one point, I considered him a surefire top 30. I think that is a little bit questionable now, but it's still unquestionably, these are two of the top guys of the last 20 years. There's no disputing that. To put them as the television main event with the title on the line, even if it goes into a schmozzy finish, which I think would have been pretty well expected, then you go into it thinking this is going to be a great performance and a reason to tune into the show and see what the rest of the roster has to offer and what WWE Creative can muster up on what they heavily hyped as their season premiere. So a couple of things that I had going into that show that really carried over into my thoughts on AEW and NXT both was the following five categories. Commentary, for one. I'm going to insert that back into the fold. For the longest time, I've gotten into this mode of ignoring commentary, and I don't think that I should. I'm going to be holding a product to a higher standard. New Japan has reminded me what product-enhancing announcing can be, and that's something of a quiet expectation on my end. I think NXT, as mentioned last week, also does a great job there. Narrative flow across the show. What I mean by that is that I want the show to have a reasonable sort of flow to it across its runtime. 3 hours is tough, but it's not unprecedented. They did a very good job in the early Authority era giving you three-hour Raws that seemed to have a coherent mindset toward them. You look at College Game Day, the ESPN preview show of a college football program. Like WWE, there's a lot of material they have to cover. There's a lot of attention. They have to give a lot of different teams and programs, but they do it very well. There is a theme that flows across their three-hour runtime. In-ring quality. Certainly, if there's going to be matches, I'd like them to be of a high quality. I'd like them to have meaning. I would like for them to feature some sort of stakes. So if it's not meaning in terms of establishing a number one contender, then I want it to seem like this is a match that's going to build to something for the character beyond just showing up and having a match on TV. Having a match is one thing. Having a match with meaning is entirely different. Peak angles and promos. So we're talking about really quality microphone segments. We're talking about angles that inspire some sort of desire to see what happens with the individuals involved as you move toward a pay-per-view or the next television show. And then finally, the strength of the hook to watch the next show and or pay-per-view. So I want them to sell me again on pay-per-views. It's no longer a given that just because if it's a $9.99 price tag that I'm just going to commit that money to them without thinking twice, without there being any need for a quote-unquote go-home show. So there's going to be an inherent advantage to a company like AEW for that, because go-home shows are going to be, realistically, a real thing, because they have to sell a pay-per-view until they have their streaming service or whatever sort of model they eventually adopt that I assume eventually will be WWE Network-like. So, Monday Night Raw. I go into it, I'm excited, I'm ready to put this formula to the test, and just taking it bit by bit, the commentary I thought for Raw was lukewarm to start. I thought they picked up a little bit as things went on, but the first couple of minutes were pretty awkward. It's clear these guys hadn't worked together before, which is somewhat of an odd choice, wouldn't you say? I mean, wouldn't you want on a season premiere, on a show of this magnitude, on a week of this caliber, to put your best foot forward? And yet they present a commentary team that's has never actually worked together, which is just a strange thought process to me. But, I mean, that's WWE's got a lot of things it needs to do right to retain their spot as my go-to promotion. They're doing some big stuff right, but I think commentary is one of the big things that they generally don't do well. And I think in part it's because of just not putting groups together that have a lot of chemistry, not testing them out first, not putting them on lesser shows. I mean, it's clear that Vic Joseph and Madden both kind of have their chemistry going because they have worked together before, but throwing in Jerry Lawler is a questionable choice from the outset. I saw a lot of heat drawn from that decision online the previous week, and that is what it is. But if they're going to keep that commentary team, then I think that they need to, they really need to hopefully get that chemistry established in a hurry and figure out what their various roles are going to be. I will admit, There wasn't a whole lot that hooked me beyond that aforementioned Universal Championship match. So to immediately have that taken off the table very clearly with the angle they ran with Brock Lesnar did not, for me, and I think for others that are just dog-tired of these old-time guys, these part-time guys coming back into the fold and having such prominent roles, you know, it's really tough to get into what they're trying to present. It's hard to invest in a product that keeps going back to that well. So Brock Lesnar coming out, obviously for those of you who have known me for a while that have listened to this show for some time, know very well how I feel about Brock Lesnar. I don't want to talk about him. I'm not going to reiterate past points, but I would say this. I think Brock Lesnar as a character would be similar to if in Avengers, the original Avengers that came out in 2012, Thanos was the villain then, and then he won and was the villain in Avengers that became Age of Ultron, and then was the villain in Avengers Infinity War, as was expected, and then was also the villain in Avengers Endgame. It's just the same thing over and over and over again. No new take on it. It's all the same. Nothing changes with Brock Lesnar. He is the same guy that he was a few years ago when the whole Suplex City thing began. I mean, 2014, 5.5 years ago, almost 6 years ago, is when the Brock Lesnar that we now know came into existence. And that character remains exactly the same as it was back then. And they just keep repeating and recycling it because of his name value. The downside to that is that it has made for a very stale product. So, you know, I think obviously you can praise the angle where Brock destroyed Rey Mysterio and his son Dominic as something that made the Mysterios very sympathetic, and I agree with that, but the downside to it is that for any fan who is seeking something different, that wants something else, that wants something besides what we've repeatedly been shoveled into our mouth ad nauseum for the last 5 years, this just wasn't it. And so it put a real damper on the product. I gave it another hour or so to really hook me, but I'll admit, I couldn't finish it. It just, I felt like by the end of it, and this is not said with any ill will, and this is not said with a whole lot of emotion, because I'm at this place where I'm almost just numb to WWE and what their creative process is. So I don't say this emotionally, I simply say it factually. What they offered on Monday Night Raw in the season premiere was an extreme disappointment. The bait and switch was a bad idea. I think that they had a great main event that would have hooked a lot of people. They could have run a similar Brock angle, and who knows where this thing with the Mysterios is going. But you know, for my taste, it just didn't get me to a place where I was really all that excited about trying to give WWE a chance. Going into Friday, you know, the idea of Brock beating Kofi Kingston and winning the WWE title, that doesn't inspire anything in me either. So WWE really took a bad hit with what they presented. And then, you know, you bring out Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, and I was watching that segment on Miz TV with my wife, actually, and I was, you know, I genuinely, and I know this will surprise some of you who are a little bit down on my WWE haterade, so to speak, but I genuinely went into that segment wanting to give it a chance and wanting to see where it went. Now, I don't really have much issue with what it led to, the development of the 5-on-5 match that's going to take place at Crown Jewel. I'm not someone who's all that wrapped up in the political dynamic of Crown Jewel and going over to Saudi Arabia. In my opinion, in a business, you know, you go make your money where you can. If someone from Saudi Arabia got a hold of a video of me doing a healthcare workshop, and which I give a damn good one, by the way, and if someone caught that on video and sent it to someone in Saudi Arabia and they paid me 10 grand to and flew and took care of my expenses to go and do a presentation over there, no offense to anyone who feels politically charged about the subject, but anybody who had their head chopped off, that would not cross my mind for 1 second. I would take the money and I would go do it, and I would be happy to do it. That doesn't mean I'm not sympathetic to the situation that people are up in arms about in regards to Saudi Arabia, but that's not really my concern. My concern is that we just continually get into this repetitive cycle with WWE where it's clear that the crux of this program is being built around what in the wider entertainment industry they refer to as recycled IP. I was reading an article on TheRinger.com that Bill Simmons, my favorite basketball writer, that he developed, and it was an article on the I Love the 80s series from back in the early 2000s that came out when I was in college. And it was putting into the forefront the idea of nostalgia, tickling the nostalgia bone, so to speak. And I thought they made a great point. I'm just going to read it verbatim here. Quote, "It often feels like we're living at the center of a vortex of recycled IP, an entertainment that's designed to tickle the nostalgia bone without bringing something new to the conversation can sometimes feel a bit easy or lazy." And that, to me, is what the crux of the issue was when I tried to watch Monday Night Raw. As we started out with Brock Lesnar dominating, we've seen that before, been there, done that. It's reached its peak. That peak was 5 years ago almost, leading up to WrestleMania 31. And then here we are recycling that, and then we've got Hogan and Flair out there, and we're recycling that, and it's a program that doesn't feel fresh, that doesn't feel like it's got any real life to it. And so going into the Wednesday programs, there was a very clear-cut opportunity for one of those to completely snatch my attention, because I went into the end of the week with absolutely no desire to tune in to Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. The presentation, I would have assumed, would be great, but if we're talking Steve Austin, if we're talking The Rock, if we're talking Hulk Hogan, if we're talking Brock Lesnar as WWE champion, then ladies and gentlemen, I mean, that's just a tough sell to me in 2019. Now let's switch gears to All Elite Wrestling's debut on TNT, because all in all, I thought it was fantastic. I was emotionally gripped by it. I thought that the commentary teams did a good job. And what I heard, I mean, it was a show in which my wife and I were watching it together. She had a lot that she was saying and talking to me about throughout the earlier part of the show. So it wasn't until the last 45 or so minutes that I could really fully dial into the commentary dynamic. But from what I heard during the 45 minutes or so that I watched without any real interruption, I thought it sounded like Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross, and Excalibur really did a nice job gelling together. They brought some good dynamics to the table, the kind of thing, like I mentioned with New Japan, that just adds value to what you're watching. It's not bickering about something that happened 4 weeks ago. It's not arguing about something that doesn't have anything to do with anything going on in the ring. It's very, at the very least, focused on the product, and that matters. So, being fair, I want to try to be fair here. The end of the show that featured the return to prominence of Jake Hager, formerly known as Jack Swagger. I like Jack Swagger. I liked him a lot back in the day. I thought he pretty well reached his ceiling in WWE. I didn't think that there was much else that he really could have accomplished. I think that his ceiling was always a fringe world title contender because of his size and skill. But on the charisma dynamic, I mean, that whole thing didn't really seem to lend itself to being a huge, big-time player, but not everybody needs that to be a top guy. If I'm going to talk about people coming in to WWE that are past their prime, that aren't really all that interesting to me because of overexposure, then I know there's going to be a camp that's going to say something comparable about Hager. I don't necessarily feel that way yet, because right now what we've seen from Jake Hager is he was a surprise addition to a show in such a way where it was him and five, along with four other guys. So the makings of a potential faction led by Jericho, supported by Santana, Ortiz, and Sammy Guevara. And now also adding the dynamic of Jake Hager. Jake Hager is rising through the MMA ranks, so this is not a guy who's just been sitting quietly and idly by. He is advancing his career in mixed martial arts, and we've seen how much of a success that mixed martial arts from pro wrestling back to pro wrestling after mixed martial arts or during it can be an asset to a promotion. So we'll see what happens there. I think that I wasn't blown away by it, the ending of the show, but overall, I thought AEW's first show was tremendous. I think that Chris Jericho as champion is still, it's a dynamic I'm still going to take a little bit of an issue with, but you can see from the star power that he brings, you can see from his name recognition, the way that he was used on this show, that, you know, it was, maybe it will turn out to be the right call in the long run. I think that whoever takes the championship from him is going to gain a lot from it. But just looking at the show quality, I thought that AEW did a really nice job of both making it worth your time to watch on the night. The quality of the matches was really strong, from Cody versus Sammy to start the show to Pac versus Hangman Page later on, though that wasn't as good as I thought it could be, to the general overall dynamic throughout the main event, the women's title match. I thought that this was a nice flowing program. And that's the thing. I mean, I think that's the one thing that differentiates both AEW and NXT from WWE proper, is the narrative flow across the runtime. There was a lot of focus on next week as well, so the strength of the hook to watch this next show is strong, and they're also building to the pay-per-view. And the pay-per-view is 5 weeks from now, but you're looking at Cody versus Jericho, and they hyped it really well, and you're looking at the Jon Moxley versus Kenny Omega match, and they hyped that adequately well. Then you've got these other dynamics where I think it's realistic that we could see Santana and Ortiz interrupt during the Young Bucks match next week, and we could end up with a scenario in which the Young Bucks are out in the first round of the tag team title tournament, and they're building toward what should be a tremendous spotlight tag team match at this next pay-per-view between the Bucks and Santana and Ortiz. So there's a lot of interesting dynamics going on in AEW that's not just because of a passion for a product that's in its infancy and that's offering a strong alternative. It's in part because they're just doing a good job of showing you some of the cards they've got on the table, teasing some of the cards they might have on the table for later. They've got announced matches throughout the next several weeks to hype up, to live up to the hype that they are giving them. I thought that from that standpoint, AEW knocked it out of the park. There weren't really any real angles or promos that I thought were all that engaging. The whole Jericho beatdown of Cody was basic booking 101. So I'm going to want to see that eventually. I'm going to want to see some talking segments that add value. I was expecting that from Jon Moxley. I thought maybe he'd come out there and really set the tone for what that show could be from a verbal component, adding that dynamic into the fray. We didn't see much of that on NXT either, so not a whole lot in that regard. MJF obviously cut a short promo, but I want to see some verbal altercations that also in and of themselves build to matches in a much more pronounced way. Although I think Scorpio Sky did a spot on impression of Obama, and I liked that whole thing. I think a lot of it was very basic, what we saw in both shows, NXT and AEW, but there's just something about AEW. Some of it's, of course, got to be the presentation. I mean, you look at AEW versus NXT, and you're drawn to AEW's production value. You're drawn to that big building that they sold out, 15,000 people for their first show. I mean, that's, you can't say that AEW is not at least in the game in terms of competition when they're going and doing something like that kind of number at a show, at a venue like Washington, D.C.'s, whatever they call it now. I always think it of the MCI Center, but clearly that's not what it is anymore. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about a big venue, one that's hosted SummerSlam 2005, most prominently, I think. We're talking about a major pro wrestling venue, a major basketball arena where the Wizards play. And when you watch AEW, it looks like you're watching Raw. That's what my wife said. She said, it kind of looks like you're watching Raw. I asked her point blank, when you look at the presentation here, when you look at the quality of the production, what do you think? And that's what she said. And I can see that. And that's a gigantic leap forward for a pro wrestling entity beyond WWE proper as compared to something like NXT, which in Full Sail, it's got the great crowd, but if you're magnifying that crowd times 15, crazy hot crowd for AEW, and I'm expecting that to be the norm. They're the, as one of the reviews I read, it talked about the crowd for AEW being the sixth man. I like that dynamic. You can use the 12th man analogy for football. I mean, it's just a real boost to the show when everybody's so into everything. And I like that. And hey, let's not mince words here, man. I mean, this is not just a dynamic that's in play because it's not WWE. It is not just about that. I think if you watch these shows and you have an attention to detail and you break it down via some kind of rubric, whether the one I'm using with commentary, narrative, in-ring quality, angles, and the hook to watch the following week, or you have some other formula, these shows, AEW, NXT, they're just on a different quality level than WWE right now. And it's sad, but I think it's unfortunately for WWE, it's the reality. It's why there is such a demand for these alternatives to pop up on television. It's not just because the world is looking for wrestling to put on TV. It's because there's a demand, and they're answering that demand by putting these shows on TV. So, giving some credit where due to NXT itself, that was a hell of a show in its own right, wasn't it? I mean, my goodness, the quality of the in-ring action I thought was better than what we saw from AEW. So I'm going to be very curious to see week to week if NXT can keep that up, because there was some takeover quality-like action on there just with the introduction of commercial breaks. Now, I thought both shows did a really nice job of trying to limit that dynamic by having the picture in the picture. I thought that was very cool. I thought it was very clear that NXT and AEW were acutely aware of each other. I mean, naturally they are. I mean, this whole dynamic that people are bringing to the table that they're not competing with each other is asinine to me. I mean, you look at Cody in his first match. I mean, he is the heart and soul of AEW. And his first match was announced as was going to be the opening match on the first show. And what does NXT do to try to counter it? They go with their main event first. They put Matt Riddle versus Adam Cole for the NXT Championship in that opening spot. And I thought, frankly, it was the best match of the week. I mean, I thought that they just really knocked it out of the park with that match. So, I mean, to me, that was the best one of all of them from across both shows. But the fact that they had both of those matches going simultaneously was a real callback. I mean, we talk about it in the context of competition like that's a bad thing sometimes on social media. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think it's great that these companies are trying to outfox each other, and I think it's only going to make them better. I'll be genuinely curious to see if NXT can keep this up. I think they've got a hell of a roster, so you're going to presume that they can. But this was a big first night for them. I thought that switching gears a little bit and focusing on them solely for a moment, the returns of Tommaso Ciampa at the end of the show was awesome. I mean, that's a bigger deal, I think, in modern pro wrestling than Jake Hager. Pro wrestling fans, the types that are going to be instantly attracted to this Wednesday Night War, to this competition, they're going to be more into the return of Tommaso Ciampa because of the career year that he was having before he had to bow out with that neck surgery earlier this year. Who knows what's going to happen when he reaches WWE proper. Maybe he never does. Maybe NXT having a two-hour shot in prime time on USA Network prevents Gargano and Ciampa from ever having to go to WWE and get fumbled and bumbled there creatively. But Finn Balor coming back, to me, that was perhaps one of the biggest things that happened this week in pro wrestling amongst this competition, because if NXT is prepared, if WWE proper is prepared to allow guys of Finn Balor's stature, because I think Finn Balor is one of those guys who, conversely to a Jake Hager who maximized what they could get out of him, I don't think they've even scratched the surface as to what they can get out of Balor. Maybe they scratched the surface when they gave him the Universal Championship, but creatively leading up to that, it wasn't lighting the world on fire. I think that Finn Balor's got the potential to be a much bigger deal. And if they're sending him back down to NXT, if perhaps at some point we get returns of other guys who really excelled in the NXT show to come back and re and breathe some new life into their characters by getting back under Triple H's creative booking scheme, I think that's amazing, and I think that's going to give NXT a real leg up in this competition with AEW and, of course, WWE itself. But Finn Balor coming back. Finn Balor is one of my favorite wrestlers on the roster today, so I'm a big fan of the decision to bring him back. For what it means for WWE proper, I mean, at this point, you just don't. It's hard to put any faith or stock in whatever WWE's trying to do week to week and month to month, because it's just, I think a lot of us are just so hot and cold on it, mostly cold, that the door is wide open for NXT to just kick it down and be the true competitor to AEW, who's coming in hot. I'll be curious also to see if NXT advances up the venue, doing away with the Full Sail and maybe eventually working their way up to running some bigger arenas too. But looking across the board overall at what NXT produced on Wednesday night, commentary, check. Narrative flow, check. In-ring quality, the best of the week. Peak angles, promos, kind of right on par there with AEW. Not a whole lot to offer there, but what they did offer was fine. What they did offer was good and show-enhancing. I liked the interview with Adam Cole, for instance. The hook to watch next week, the Cruiserweight title coming onto the show. I don't know that that can compare personally to the AEW Tag Team title tournament, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's this week, I think, overall, AEW just to me set the tone. The production value being as good as it is, the venue selling out a crowd of that many people, for them to have similar quality to what NXT was doing, but to do it on a grander scale, gives AEW a serious boost in my little personal competition I've got going. So I'd be curious to get your thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Again, after another loaded week, I'm going to bow out a little bit earlier than usual and let you get caught up on all the other various podcasts that are out there to listen to review this historic week. SmackDown, you know, if you want to tell me something you loved about what WWE proper did this week, I'm open to it. I'm open to changing perspectives. There aren't that many people out there that are writing the kind of column that I want to see that helps me change my thoughts about the way I think about a certain wrestling company. So WWE, based on old standards that I had watched them set for 30 years, just isn't living up to their own hype, to their own abilities. And that's sad, but AEW and NXT certainly did. Very impressed. Which was the show of the week to you? Do you have any thoughts on what the NWA is doing? Is there another product like Major League Wrestling that you think I should be watching? So give me your thoughts at the Doc LOP. I'd appreciate it, and we'll keep the conversation going on social media. In the meantime, I'll catch you next week for the next episode of The Doc Says, and we'll see where we go with this Wednesday night war and the overall competition at large in professional wrestling today. It's a great thing. I'm loving it. Hope you are too. Thanks again for joining me, and have a great week.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the Mania Era is bringing terror on LOP Radio. This is the purveyor for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania Era, the